Lee, you're here. October 8th, 2020, and we will start by suspending approving the September minutes until next month in November. So we'll go ahead and approve the agenda. Everyone got a chance to see the agenda?
I did.
So,
yeah. So I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
I'll second the motion.
All in favor? Hi, Matt Cochran.
Hi, Josie Muse.
Hi, Cookie Shouse.
Hi, Colleen Thompson. Did you get that, Peg?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. So we'll move on to Lee Nellis, and welcome, Lee.
Hello. So, I know I sent you a lot of stuff.
Yes.
But that's okay, because it reflects everything we've done since April.
Yeah.
And I would like to begin by just really, really quickly talking about what's different. At least in a big way from what you might have seen before. And there are a couple of pieces to that. There isn't anything significantly different about the general plan amendments. The worksheets that you have are updated and caught up with the zoning ordinance amendments. So those are different, but they obviously just reflect the zoning. In the zoning, there are a handful of things that I wanted to mention because we talked about them at our last meeting, and my understanding was that I was going to make some changes based on that conversation. So the first thing, and in some ways probably the most important thing, is that we had talked about the scale of development and agreed, as I understood the meeting, that if you don't have direct access to Utah 12, that you're limited to a maximum of 15 parking spaces for a commercial project.
Correct.
So can I just say one thing? So are we looking at Boulder Zoning Process Memo 8A?
Yes, you are.
Thank you.
Yes. And what I'm about to say is summarized there on the first page, the change in the scale of development, which I think was a really good change. We talked about adding internal landscaping and parking areas, and I did that. And I also, as I was making changes, realized there were some notes on table 3 that I needed to make sure what is in these standards is compatible or was compatible. So I pulled some stuff that used to be attached to table 3 into these standards. Nothing that made any big difference, but I just wanted things to be consistent. The design standards, as we discussed them, have been added. They are now at the end of chapter 22. And we can go back to those to whatever extent you guys want to, but I think they reflect the decisions that we made. And then finally, and this is something we didn't talk about very much, but you'll recall towards the end, we talked about the use table, and there was a question raised about making some things that had been conditional uses, temporary uses. And that was my effort to sort of just be consistent with standard practice. It's not necessary, but I went back and read your chapter in the existing zoning ordinance on temporary uses and realized that while it sets up a process for the zoning administrator, it's really vague about what the requirements for temporary uses might be. And so I went back into to chapter 9, and you'll see these changes. If you look at the memo that I prepared, on page 5, you will see the changes that I made to section 905, which is the chapter in the chapter on temporary uses. And instead of leaving the zoning administrator with sort of the vague direction to say, hey, make sure that the temporary use is consistent with the zoning ordinance, I felt there were certain things about temporary uses that you can anticipate being problems. And so you're going to go on to page 5 there. And let's just make it specific that the zoning administrator can deal with those things that we know might be issues. So the new language here, I tinkered a bit with some of the rest of chapter 9, but the new language, which is section 905, says that the zoning administrator may condition approval of a temporary use permit on the submission of a parking plan. Whenever you have a temporary use, like an event, somebody puts a food truck somewhere, it changes parking patterns. And so parking is one of the things that you have to pay a lot of attention to with temporary uses. Two, and I've seen this over and over again, particularly with food trucks, but any type of temporary use tends to change the amount of litter that is blowing around an area, right? And so the administrator can ask for a solid waste management plan. And then a sanitation plan, if you have an event or something for restroom facilities, a plan that shows how signs, another thing that sometimes gets out of hand with temporary events is signs that aren't approved through the regular process to be consistent with what you require for signs in chapter 10 of your ordinance. So I put all those things specifically there to give the zoning administrator a much more clear guidance on temporary uses. And then I also, the final piece of that is to say that the zoning administrator may refer a temporary use permit application to the planning commission. The referral doesn't change the power. The zoning administrator still approves it, but the referral will be to seek the planning commission's comments and recommendations if the zoning administrator thinks that that's necessary. So I feel like there's a really significant improvement here in the town's ability to regulate temporary uses. And so those are the things that are in here. And beyond that, I think I should see what questions or comments people have. I know that you did not have a lot of time to read this. September was basically an overwhelming month for us here, and it was late by the time I got to pounding all this out, and there's a lot here to do, but you have it all now, I think, in a form that reflects the conversations we've had, and I would be happy to answer any questions or accept any thoughts or comments you have here, and we can then go forward from there as to what you want to do next.
Okay, so I have a couple of thoughts here, Lee. This is Matt. Thanks for all your work. And the first one is simply about temporary use. Is were there the things you added into temporary use, were there any that were conditional use before?
Well, of course, we're trying to do an apples and oranges here because what I added are possibilities, specific possibilities for the zoning administrator to ask for information that were not, it wasn't there no matter what you called it before.
Okay.
And so this is with the thought of what issues do temporary uses often create. And then, but to go deeper into your question and go back to where we were the last time we talked, what I had done was change a handful of things in the use table to T. And if you look at the use table, which has not changed, I did not change that from the last version that you saw.
Okay.
We had long-term temporary uses, which were provided for in Chapter 9. We had the new idea of mobile food businesses, food truck, basically. We had special events, which were provided for previously in Chapter 9. So the only one of those that was not previously specifically in the temporary use thing was the mobile food business, which you could require a CUP for, and we can talk about that. The other thing that I changed, there are two other things I changed, both related things. I changed a farm stand to a T and a community market or farmer's market to a T. That's how those are usually regulated. Now, there is nothing that says we can't change them back to be conditional uses. But I guess my question is, with the additional guidance for the zoning administrator and the power to refer these applications to the Planning Commission for comment, would we need to do that? We could, and I'm not going to object one way or the other. But that's the list of what's a T in the use table is the special events, which always were, and those are for, what, up to 45 days, Curtis? The use of an RV or mobile home as a temporary residence, since we haven't been talking about residential uses, that was in as a temporary use, but we haven't talked about it. Mobile food businesses, food trucks would be an addition. Long-term temporary uses, which were not very well defined, and still aren't super well defined in the ordinance, were always a temporary use. And then farm stand and community markets were formerly conditional uses. Okay. Those are the two things that were formerly conditional uses. No reason not to change them back if that's what you guys feel is the right thing to do. I made this switch because particularly for temporary short-term uses like a farm stand or a farmer's market, communities usually don't put them through the bigger conditional use process. They usually have some sort of temporary permit.
Okay, in Boulder, thank you.
In Boulder, we can move them back to conditional use, but that's the landscape there is that we now have better guidance for what was always temporary uses, and then I changed those two things to temporary uses.
Great. Okay, and I would just propose for the Planning Commission to think about whether that feels appropriate simply because the decision goes from the zoning and from the Planning Commission to the zoning administrator on some of those things that have been changed.
Right.
And we can talk about that later. The other thing that I have talked about the last couple of meetings and I wanted to do today, if everyone's willing, is I wanted to run a scenario through the commercial development standards to see how it holds up. Is that something that we can do fairly straightforwardly? Or that
I think we can do that pretty quickly if you have an example in mind.
Okay,
I
would like to set up an RV park in my GMU property.
Okay.
So
how big?
This is Josie. I don't know. I don't know how long this process will take to run it through. If there's maybe some other questions on what you've presented before we do that, so that we have that opportunity to ask.
Sure.
Yeah. Sorry to stomp on that, you guys.
Yeah.
If there's other questions, I think Josie probably has a good point is if they're quick questions, we can just answer them and then we can go back to this idea and see how it looks.
Okay. Josie, do you have questions?
Just a couple.
Okay. Why don't you go first because I didn't really get a chance to look whole lot. So go for it.
Okay. So just a quick response on what Matt just discussed on temporary uses regarding the farm stand and farmer's market. The only issue I see with temporary use on that is that we have the potential to, you know, offer that type of activity for maybe 6 months. And it doesn't really fit into the temporary use 120 day long term. And so that's the one flag I see on that.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. So moving on, I'm going to focus on the zoning amendments. because those are the ones that I have a couple of questions on. So amend chapter 12, this is on page 6, section 1201, purpose and intent.
Yes.
This is regarding our sensitive lands, hillside, Mesa Tops overlay. And one of the changes is that it says that except no commercial uses shall be permitted, which I agree. But my question is, if we scroll down a little bit and you see home business, a home business is an industrial or commercial activity. So to expand on that, if we go down to the chapter 22, so, sorry, I'm going kind of fast, Peg, if you're trying to follow. Hold on, let me scroll down there. Okay, so first chapter 21 does not mention, it does not have the same language that chapter 22 does.
That's
in chapter 22 in 1A states that there shall be no commercial development within the sensitive lands, hillside, and mesa. So it's very specific. Now, my question is, if a home business is a commercial activity, shouldn't that language also be in chapter 21?
Well, that's a great question, and you've pointed out something here that I can see really does need to be clarified. It was my thought, and obviously we haven't talked about this, and we can see where you guys come down on it. It was my thought that home businesses would be okay in the overlay district, but not commercial uses beyond a home business. And that could be clarified here with a pretty easy change in the language. But of course, before we clarify the language, we need to see if people agree with the idea. So I guess you can take it that while I didn't get the language pinned down as tight as it ought to be, I had anticipated that home businesses would still be permitted in that overlay district. If you want to change that, we can change that very easily.
So my concern is, you know, that overlay district we have for a reason, because those are sensitive lands. And so I'm questioning whether it's appropriate to allow any type of commercial use there because of the increased traffic, primarily, and that effect it has, you know, on that resource. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'd like to hear what the other commissioner members think about that.
So, Josie, which what properties are these where these home businesses would happen?
That's a good question, and there may not be many. I have not seen that overlay. And you know, who knows, that overlay might already take us out of the slope. I don't know, but Mesa Tops, there are Mesa Tops within Boulder Municipal, not including Black Mesa, right?
Right, like
so that's probably, yeah, it'd be Anson's and where Anson lives, and then the one that's on the west side of Lower Boulder. So those are the two that have road access that I can think of right up hand. So it would apply.
And where do we see the overlay map? So if you guys, I mean, where can you see that?
I think this comes back to our whole mapping issue. Is the overlay sitting in the town office? Can it be digitized and put online so folks can access it?
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking there is a sensitive lands overlay map that was in that RPG booklet that we got a couple of years ago, remember, 2017?
Oh.
I think so.
Yeah.
And if so, I'm pretty sure we do have access to a digital copy of that.
Okay.
So my initial thoughts on this are simply that, well, certainly sensitive lands and hillsides seem appropriate. I'm concerned that there may be people who live on Mesa Tops who would then not be able to do a home business already existing. But I suppose that they would be grandfathered in, or how would that work? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, they would become nonconforming uses if the business already exists. So That question is answered pretty easily. The question is, if I'm on top of a mesa and not particularly visible, is it okay if I have a small business in my home? I have a question about splitting the difference here, which is that while it would, add a little complexity, it's not hard to do. We could say that a home business within that district has to be what I would think, and this is just me, being extemporaneous here. If you had a small home business that's totally enclosed, that doesn't have any outside workspace or storage, that's just within the home. You could even say it doesn't get to have a sign if you wanted to. Maybe you could allow someone to have like a professional office within that overlay that didn't really have any impact on neighbors or the view. So maybe we could change the way the standards for home businesses work there enough to say that they will be permitted, but they'll be more limited than the standards would allow elsewhere in the town. So we could split the difference, or we could just say, hey, and like you guys, I don't have a clear picture of how much land this covers. So I'm guessing here, if it doesn't really affect that many property owners and homes, then maybe you could just say we won't allow home businesses up in that district at all. If you guys look at the map and say, hey, this is people might want to, people might be able to do that in a place where it isn't so much of an issue, then we could maybe try to split the difference the way that I'm suggesting. But I really think that before we can have a satisfactory answer to this, somebody's going to have to look at the map.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Lee, the concern here is.
Go ahead, Josie.
Thank you. So we can finish, wrap this one up. The concern is access. It's
right.
Access, because you're on extremely steep slopes to get up to the mesa tops, in that one in particular. And that same is going to be if this is, properties that may be off a slope off into a drainage. It's going to be
right.
Access. So if we take that approach that we slightly tweak the standards, which I think is the right path, we would have to look very carefully at the access, because that's
right.
The issue. The other things you mentioned aren't much of an issue, except for setbacks on mesas. That's definitely an issue for scenery and visibility.
Right. But that would also be an issue for a home up there. So to some degree, it's covered. Now, I'm looking here at where we're at the beginning of chapter 21.
Lee, before you move on, I've got a question on that.
Right.
Right now, I'm processing. I haven't received the application yet, but I'm processing an application for DW Tower. And the application will be to replace the existing tower up on top of Thompson Ledge. And these folks have entered into agreement with the property owner to go up and replace the existing tower with a better tower, and then co-locate the one in the middle of the town, because I have an active application on the one in the middle of town. So if we pass something that says no commercial use on top of a mesa, then we may be prohibiting what so far appears to be the highest and best.
Right.
Is the site where
this tower is located in that overlay zoning district?
Yeah, it's located on the top of a mesa, and this says Mesa Tops.
Yeah, but there's a map of this somewhere, so we'd have to be looking at the map to be sure. At least I hope there's a map of it somewhere. If not, then there's another problem. But I guess that I think we could we could certainly, in response to what you're saying and what Josie is saying, we can go back into the home business chapter. And of course, that would, that's not a home business anyway. That'd be regulated as commercial.
Right.
So there's a separate issue we've got to think about with that. But for the home businesses, you've got the language that we talked about at some length in item 5 on page 11, where we talk about other restrictions on parking or traffic generation by home businesses. And it would be very easy to add a concern about steepness, you know, and narrowness and the quality of access to a home business. There, you probably have enough scope the way it's written to consider that, but it would be really easy to make that a little more specific and cover the concern about access. And that would then give you the power to say, no, that this home business is not going to be approved because it doesn't comply with item 5 here. It doesn't have decent access. So we need to look at a map and think about which properties these are, but I can see what I think is a pretty effective response to Josie's question.
I would just want to put in, or, you know, put in everybody's mind that not only, you know, if we're going to look at this access, is it a resource issue? But it's also, what about the liability of the town when you're allowing some type of commercial activity in a steep, dangerous, you know, approach, which the ones that we've mentioned are? How does that affect, you know, what's the town's responsibility there?
So what I'll do, I think, to make this easiest is that I will assume that we need to make that change to item 5 there in chapter 21, and I'll do it. And then you guys can somehow get together with a map so that you're sure which properties we're talking about. And if looking at that map raises some additional questions besides this one, then we can, you know, make further changes in response to those questions. But it's pretty easy to tweak item 5 there in this direction. And I think that I'll just do that. And then if you come up with something else we need to address, we'll add that after you guys have had a chance to examine that map.
Okay, thank you. So hopefully the next ones we can get through pretty quick. So chapter 21, page 12, I'm looking at 7C, and this is regarding nuisances. It says first that, you know, that it's only permitted to the extent allowed for residential occupancies by NFPA 1, which is the Uniform Fire Code. And then it goes to say that there can be an exception to that, right? But they still have to comply with all the requirements of the 2000 Uniform Fire Code, including inspections by the fire department. So to me, it's the exception is the same thing that you stated in sentence 1, unless you can explain to me. If they have to apply by both, then how do they get an exception? I'm opposed to an exception, so that's why I'm asking.
Okay, well, let me try to explain it before we talk about whether it's a good idea. The code allows very small quantities of things like varnish, solvents, those types of flammable materials.
Right. I understand the code. I'm really familiar with fire code.
Right. And the code also then, so that would be what's in one. And what I was trying to say here is that, okay, everybody's allowed that, right? But that the Planning Commission could permit more if it complies with the requirements. And so if you read this where it says all requirements, read it as all other requirements. And that's the intent, is to say, okay, if I have, I guess the example that pops into my mind usually is a woodworking shop. And I need to, or wants to have an additional larger quantity of finishes, then the Planning Commission could permit that larger quantity, larger than the fire code allows, but that the storage would still have to be in accord with other provisions of the fire code. And so then you'd be getting into the commercial part of the fire code, and they would have to have storage and ventilation and everything that meets that, which very, very few home businesses are going to do. But I always write these things trying to anticipate that one weird exception. There isn't any pressing need to have the exception, really. I just, like I said, I try to write these things anticipating. But if people are not comfortable with having the possibility of an exception, then pretty easy to erase that.
Okay, well, I would, you know, defer that back to Planning Commission discussion. It does raise a flag for me. It's a concern. I think that we should be following the 2006 Uniform Fire Code. And if we're making exceptions, commercial exceptions, it's taken it out of, you know, the scope of what a home business is supposed to be.
I'll agree with that.
Okay. All righty.
Yeah, I get that too. I
will change that then, since it sounds like we have something of a consensus.
I appreciate the anticipation, but humans and red flags and loopholes,
right,
are, you know,
right,
how they are. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well,
anyone else have any comments?
I have one more. Sorry. But I don't read all
fine.
The documents. Okay. Chapter 22. We're on
22.
Page 13.
13.
One.
The beginning.
Yeah. Number four.
Okay.
All right. Must commercial development provide utilities and access in accordance with town standards? Yes. All right. So B, we say that UDOT approval is required for access to Highway 12. That's state law. That's good.
Right.
Okay. So when I go back to the general plan, and we have identified in section 110-6 traffic flow problem areas.
Right.
Okay. So
we did.
We don't address that anywhere in these standards that. What does that mean? I think we should add, if these areas that are identified in section 10.6 must be mitigated prior to allowing commercial development in these problem areas. And to build on that, I don't think that should be at the taxpayer's expense. That should be at the
right.
developer's expense, because we're talking commercial development. So I propose that we add, after B, we add C, stating traffic flow problem areas identified in section 10-6 of the general plan must be mitigated prior to allowing commercial development in problem. Well, you can play with that language. In the problem areas,
right.
the
right.
cost of this mitigation must be carried by the developer.
At the developer's expense. Okay.
A question, Josie.
That in.
Would that include subdivisions?
Well, that's a different ordinance. So I would say that this is, you know, chapter 22, this commercial development, which
okay.
is a CUP, not a subdivision.
Okay.
But I'll defer that back to Lee to just.
Well, no, it's a good question that Curtis raises, but it's pretty easy. If it's in a subdivision, if someone creates a new subdivision, then that can be covered under the subdivision ordinance. But if someone is not creating a new subdivision, if they're putting in a commercial use on an existing lot, no change in boundaries, no need for a new plat, then this would apply to that. Okay, and a subdivision ordinance would not. So this essentially gives you the same power that you have to require mitigation from a subdivider to require it from, you know, any commercial developer. So I guess I think it's probably a good idea to add that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all my
Sounds
questions.
Good.
Thank you for allowing the time.
You bet.
Cool.
Does anyone else have any comments? OK. Okay, so Lee, do you want to go on?
Well, let's try a quick version of what Matt asked to do. Okay, which is to zoom through here. We'll have to make it up as we go, but we can do that. If you can, Peg, can you put the commercial standards review worksheet up on the screen?
Yep.
And we can go through the parts of that that would apply to an RV park. And what I'm going to do is we'll just go through a standard at a time. And if we have a question about whether this RV park, whether a particular standard applies to this RV park or not, I'll let Matt make that up. Okay. That work?
Okay. Yep.
Okay, so here we go. Let's see. I can't see the top of it there, but yeah, perfect. So first, the first standard gets us right back to something we were just talking about, which is that you can't have an RV park or any other commercial use in that Mesa Tops overlay. So I'm assuming that we're not talking about the Mesa Top overlay here.
No, we're not.
Okay. So that one runs down quickly. Then we have the question of watercourse buffers. And so my question to Matt is there a stream or an irrigation ditch going through the property?
There is on one end of the property.
So we'd have to have a buffer in which there was no RV park development, the buffer that was protected for the riparian area of the stream, or if there's an irrigation ditch for a distance from the irrigation ditch. So
that would leave about 8 out of 10 acres available then.
Yeah. So see, that doesn't say no. Moderate slopes. Is any of it on a slope that's between 15 and 30%?
There's one small section that's between 15% or more.
Okay. And so we'd have
we're probably reduced to about 6 acres.
Okay. Okay, well, 6 acres is still not that small a parcel. And also, you want to note there on 1D that if for some reason, in order to use the property effectively, you needed to cross that moderate slope or cross the water course, you could do that under 1D. You could have a perpendicular crossing. Okay, so there's flexibility built in here to provide access for utilities or driveway access that affects moderate slopes or the watercourse buffers. And then 1E would start to be where we get into the point scoring system and start getting into things that are interesting, which is, you know, and this would require us to look at the specific layout of the RV park, is does it take advantage of the views and natural features of the site, and that's a matter of design.
Let's say
you guys would have to, as a planning commission, score its performance on that, see how it came out. And then we get into a closely related question with 2A, which is, I don't know what the existing vegetation on your site is, but if there's trees or significant existing vegetation, are you going to be able to retain that while you build your RV park?
Yes.
Okay. So then you would have another one to score. And then there's the requirement to protect vegetation during construction. Stormwater, if you're going to disturb more than an acre, you'll have to get a state stormwater permit. Okay. Utilities, chapter 10 says that you have to hook up to the town utilities given whatever the current rules for hooking up are. And so presumably you're going to want to hook up to the water system, right?
Correct.
So access to Highway 12, we're not talking about direct access to Highway 12 here, are we?
We're not.
Okay. So then access to other roads, and we'd have to look at the design and the safety questions about your point of access to a public road.
Okay, and I don't know whether this one in particular would sit at the end of Lower Boulder Road.
Right, and so there we get into some really interesting conversations, right? And we'd pick that back up down under number 9 where we talk about parking and traffic. So I'm going to defer that one till then, okay. Because the intent of access to the roads here is technical, right? To make sure it's wide enough and all. Underground utilities, you could get some points for that. And you probably are going to want to underground the utilities within the park.
Yeah.
Dimensional standards, I'm going to assume that on 6 acres, you can meet the setbacks pretty easily.
Yes.
Okay. Maximum parking in the GMU, and since you are not directly accessible to Utah 12, you could have 15 parking spaces.
Okay.
So since we're talking about RV spaces instead of parking spaces here, we're kind of ships passing in the night, but you still have to have some parking for the office and all. Probably not going to need 15 spaces, though. Parking for a dwelling, if there's also a dwelling on the property, that parking is evaluated separately. That's easy to deal with. Land use intensity. So this is a good one. This is one that you have to think about with this project.
Okay.
How different in terms of the use of the property, in terms of the lot coverage, the amount of development that you're putting in there, how different is it going to be from its neighbors?
Pretty different. I mean, I don't know how many, I haven't designed how many RVs I want on the property or site.
Right.
But no one else has them around me. The only close thing is probably the Sugarloaf Ranch to the south, which has, you know, sort of Airbnb rentals and then
a farm. So this would be a real question that would have to be discussed by the Planning Commission when they saw an actual plan that made it easier to quantify this is this really compatible with the surrounding uses? If it isn't, then you could lose some points here.
Okay.
Okay. The next one talks about setback. Again, getting back to the setbacks, you're not going to have any trouble with those. But buffering and screening. So here we get to what also is going to be potentially very important with an RV park in the location that you're talking about. I don't know how near it is to any neighboring homes or other uses, but, you know, can you use existing vegetation or can you install vegetation that provides a buffer and mitigates the view of all those shiny metal objects?
Right. It would require installing buffering and screening.
And so you could get some points there if you were willing to do that, right?
Right.
Conflict with parking, since there's not any existing parking on the site, that's going to turn out to be not relevant. You don't have an outdoor sales area particularly. So all of 8 there is irrelevant. And we get down to 9, and 9 is the good one for this site, which gives the Planning Commission the opportunity to say, hey, you're putting too much stuff down at the end of Lower Boulder Road. And so the Planning Commission could reject this proposal just based on failure to comply with item 9.
Is conflict with parking is out? Oh, 9, but 9 is not an absolute.
9 is not an absolute. That's true. But they could knock you down a bunch of points. So, or we can change that to absolute if people want to. But I had it as a relative. But you could lose 10 points there if it's highly incompatible.
Okay.
So that one. See, we've got, when we're looking at the compatibility of this thing, as we imagine it, number 9 is really critical. In terms of how this would go, number 1E is somewhat critical. You could lose points there if you don't do a good job, if you don't have the right site. And then 6D. So you've got, just as far as we've come, there's three standards there where, while none of them are absolute, you could end up with an insurmountable number of negative points if it's not the right site and you're not doing a good job of handling it. And then you'd get into off-street parking. The RV parking part of that, that came in, that's new. That came in from the addition to Table 3, which said that if you're going to have a parking lot for commercial use, you need to make some provision for RVs, which I think in Boulder is really sensible. So that doesn't apply to RV parks. That would apply to, like, should a restaurant have a place where you can park an RV as well as regular parking places, okay? And then parking not in the front setback is not going to be a big issue with what we're talking about here. Frontage parking, it's not fronted on a public road. So that gets us on to the second sheet. And buffering and screening, this would be for a parking lot. So it really isn't going to apply here. Building access, there's not a building here to speak of. You don't have to have a discharge permit from the state. Depending on how you handle the site, you could probably imagine an RV park that generates runoff onto a neighboring property, and that would be addressed by 12B. You're not going to need an air quality permit. You're not going to have hazardous materials. Outdoor lighting, you're probably going to have some lights, right?
Right.
And those would have to have the Dark Sky Association seal of approval.
Okay.
Light trespass then would be the next question, which is whether you're directing light onto anybody else's property. And you have to look at that as a very specific question, right?
Right.
But it would be prohibited if you did. Dust and smoke, probably not a super big issue. Heat and glare, probably not an issue at all. Noise.
I'd say in an RV park, dust in a dry year going traffic going in and out, unless it's paved, I suppose, too, is something to consider.
Right. But so you'd have that one to talk about for sure. Noise. That's any commercial use that attracts people. You have to at least ask the question about noise generation.
Right. And with RV park, you'd want to consider generators and noise within a residential neighborhood that's not during quiet hours, so to speak.
Right. Right. Noxious weeds. If you have a weed infestation on your site, you would have to show that you're complying with the state law to manage that. Solid waste for an RV park would be an important one. Right? Do you have your dumpsters? Are your dumpsters buffered or screened? There is in 13B. So 13A and 13B would be important considerations looking at an RV park. Just how do you manage the trash? You're not going to generate disposable food containers because you're not a food service business. Signs, you'd have to comply with the sign part of the ordinance. Operating hours. An RV park, sort of by definition, operates 24 hours, but you could have, the Planning Commission could certainly talk about quiet hours using this standard. Drive-through, not relevant here. Standardized commercial, presumably not relevant. Accessory dwellings, you would be allowed to have a dwelling, like a lot of RV parks do, in fact, have on site for the owner and employee. And then we'd get down to those standards that we added the last discussion in number 19 here, reflectivity. Now, I think that most RVs by definition are reflective. And it would be interesting to have a conversation about how that applies to this. The color of things would apply to any building that you build. You can't really regulate the color of those RVs that are coming and going because you can't anticipate it. Building lines, this would be pretty much irrelevant because this would be about the building being perpendicular rather than parallel to a main road. Detached forms, RV parks kind of by definition are detached forms. And then landscaping, we've already talked about buffering the trash, buffering the RV sites. This sums it all up here. And would be another place where you could really lose points if you didn't do a good job. So, we don't have enough specifics to get into this at the nitty-gritty level, but what I see here is that there's 5 or 6 points where you have super significant leverage on an RV park. And could say, hey, you know, you could rack up a negative score darn quick here. If you don't have good landscaping, if you don't have landscaping of your solid waste, if you fail to prove that you have good traffic capacity, if you are really incompatible. I mean, that's one of the interesting ones for the site that you're talking about, Matt, is that I guess I would assume you'd probably get negative points because the intensity of this is so much greater than what surrounds it.
Correct.
And then views and natural features. Now that one, I don't think you automatically assume you'll get negative points there. I think you could do a good job of site design with an RV park and actually come out positive on that one. But if you look at points to leverage on what you're talking about, 6D, 9 are huge points of leverage on it. And then coming on down, 19, A, B, C, D, E, 19E is a huge point of leverage on it. And some of the others could be depending upon how you propose to do it. For sure. So
great.
That
was really helpful. I have a question for the Planning Commission after going through that. So not all of them are always applicable, but there are 19, it looks like, columns of relativity, either positive or negative, and the rest is absolute. We mentioned 5 or 6 that might be negative on this project in itself. So I wonder, you know, about whether it would be outweighed with those others. At the same time, you know, in this particular case, and I think in Boulder in general, I'm wondering if you guys think on number 9, parking and traffic might be made an absolute if we're talking about the ability now to put commercial zones in residential areas. For me, I think it should be an absolute.
I think I might agree with that.
I agree.
I do too. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I do too.
I will make that change.
I haven't scouted ahead to see what repercussions that might mean for other types of things. Lee, you might know that better than me, so.
Well, I have one question about it before we move on. What if we made it absolute? You know, Josie brought up a really good point earlier about we need to mitigate traffic problems that are on that list of problem areas that we agreed on.
Yeah.
What if we said it's absolute in those areas and it's relative everywhere else? That would give us a little more flex. It's just a thought. But I don't have any big objection to making it absolute because of the particular character of Boulder. There are a lot of places where access is limited to some degree or another. And so maybe the best way to respond to that is to make it absolute. On the other hand, I'm not playing devil's advocate here really, because I'm happy to change it to absolute. But if you say you got a minus 10 on there, where would you find 10 positive, 11 positive points to make that up?
Right.
You could say, hey, I did a really good job of orienting this to the views and protecting the vegetation, retaining the vegetation. Retaining vegetation, you can only lose points on. So you can't make up any there, but your natural features, you could make up. If you did a super duper good job, the Planning Commission could say, okay, that's positive 6. So now you're down to minus 4. Undergrounding utilities, you can get some points there. So you could make it up by doing a good job with natural features and undergrounding the utilities. So maybe the balance of the system isn't exactly what we want it to be. You could make it up by buffering your trash facilities, but not much else.
I think for me that I, yeah. You know, it's because and this is, you know, this is something that we're going to have public hearing on and go, you know, it's going to get, and so where I see myself and a lot of Boulder residents, I don't feel quite the security in that after going through it. And one of the major, major issues that's changing in the whole setup that you've done is the idea that now there can be a possibility of commercial development within a residential, beyond home business, within a residential neighborhood. So for me, that makes the parking and traffic sort of a crucial issue. So I think I'm still leaning on that as an absolute.
Okay.
And those are the same thoughts I've had. Yeah, exactly the same thoughts.
I will change that. Anything else? I think it was useful to dash through that and look at things.
Yeah, that was great.
I have a question, Lee.
Yes, Curtis.
Could you just not prohibit, I'm not talking about home occupation now, but could they not just, the Planning Commission recommend prohibiting any commercial development that doesn't have direct access off of Highway 12? I mean, do we really want commercial development down, you know, in Matt's example of RV park down on Lower Boulder Road?
Well, we kind of have already leaned that way in the sense that we changed that scale of parking standard to really ratchet down the number of spaces you could have anywhere except on Highway 12. So this would just be taking it, what you're asking, Curtis, would just be taking it one more step. I guess my thought, you guys know Boulder better than I do, but my thought is that, you know, you've got your areas with contorted access down in the Lower Boulder Road part of town. A lot of the other areas that a person might consider commercial for are on Highway 12 anyway, but if you take some of the larger parcels that are further on back towards the mountain, if somebody was saying, hey, I want to develop one of those larger parcels, they might subdivide it and put in a street system, and then you could end up having a lot on which some commercial could occur that's not directly accessible to Highway 12. I don't know how likely that is to happen anytime soon, but that would be the question I would ask if I was a landowner on one of the larger parcels is, does this prohibit me from subdividing, putting in streets, and having access to that street and then onto Highway 12. We probably don't want to outright prohibit that. But that'd be my counter question is, I can imagine on some of the larger parcels that are rising. On the other hand, we all know where the issues are, and changing it in that way would make it clear that the commercial has to have access to Highway 12, and that's it until something changes. Well, you know, I think it's legally defensible if you're willing to make the case about restricted access. And I don't think anybody is going to spend much time arguing with you about restricted access on Lower Boulder Road or in a couple of other spots. That's why I was mentioning these larger parcels, you know, off towards the mountain, along the highway, where you might have a street system installed, or a side road, conceivably even an existing side road. Up there, it's harder to make the case, right? Because they could mitigate by building good access. They've got a blank slate on those larger parcels. They don't have the issues that constrain what you're doing down along Lower Boulder Road. So that would be the place where I think you have a vulnerability.
Curtis said was, and Josie, that was our original intent in the general plan, was to keep the commercial in the designated commercial areas, which were more or less along Highway 12 already. And so I guess that's what I keep coming back to.
I agree. I mean, I'm totally in favor of restricting this to Highway 12 access. I was going to suggest, you know, a commercial overlay, so we wouldn't have to go through a zoning, right? But we had this overlay that surrounding the Highway 12 you know, footprint as another
way
to
look at this.
We wouldn't have to. I can see that. We wouldn't have to if we just restricted that they
we can define that one without having to draw a map of it pretty easily. So, you know, it's certainly not hard for me to make that change if that's what people want to do.
You know, that would also help with the sensitive lands concern, because I think that would pretty much take most of that out of the equation.
The what concern, Josie?
Sensitive lands, mesas.
Oh, yeah, okay. Sensitive lands, okay.
And another slope, yeah.
I like that, too.
Okay. Well, we're getting down to where we have a good enough discussion to get to the nitty-gritty here, I think. So what I've got at this point in time is to make 9 an absolute. To insert in here in the appropriate place, I'll have to think about where that is. That commercial has to have direct access to Highway 12. I don't think we need to make a change about the, we have to change the home business thing with respect to that Mesa Tops overlay, but we don't have to do anything with what's in there about it in the commercial standards. If we make those changes, then that clarifies where commercial can be pretty accurately. And it takes, you know, some of the standards like 6D with the land use intensity that I put in there thinking about having commercial that's not on the highway. I think we should leave that there. Because it's a good thing to check on with any project. But all of a sudden that becomes a much more mellow standard, much easier to think about. So
sounds good.
If those changes will work, I'll make them and I will get the changes back to you much sooner than I got this final full draft.
I'm in favor of that.
Me too.
If that's where we're at, is there any other questions?
I have one technical question, Lee.
Right.
So we have a rather lengthy RV, you know, like a 5-page ordinance.
Right.
Depending on how you space it. That's quite detailed on RV parks. And so do you take that ordinance and this scoring system? And because some of the stuff is found in both places.
Right.
Parking, buffering.
We'll think back to the memo I wrote with the last set of drafts. I proposed that we get this through hearing, and then we come back to RV parks, campsites, and lodging, and those types of uses, and look at the details, because there are, as you say, Curtis, a ton of details, some of which I suspect are not really necessary, some of which may be important. And I would like to take that whole lump of things. I bet we could work through it in one meeting.
Great.
And deal with that. This sets a bigger framework, and then that would be a detail that you plug in, is how I envision it in my head. But I feel like I worry about taking proposals like this to public hearing if they get more than so complicated. And particularly when you talk about the nitty-gritty details, like when you guys changed the definitions and came up with the developed campsite thing, there's some really small details that are covered in what you wrote in the definition there. And I don't want to get the whole big picture thing hung up on one of those small details about campsites. I want to get the big picture established and then go back to...
Thank you.
That was the dog. The dachshund wants to go out. She's had some teeth pulled, so she's in tough shape. But that's my thinking of it, is let's get those nitty-gritty details, which exist primarily with respect to RV parks and camping. Let's just set those aside for now, get the big picture established, then go back and run through the details. You know, we have a good process. People work well together. It won't take that long to get through that as another step. and then take that to a separate hearing so that the people who are most directly affected can focus on that and nothing else.
Sounds like a good plan to me.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Okay.
Lee, am I missing, did you send along the table of uses, the actual table?
I did not send the new table of uses. Okay. I realized that as I was printing things out for myself before the meeting. I thought also that we might, you know, end up changing things on there. Doesn't sound necessarily like we're going to at this moment. So I'll get a new table of uses ginned out, along with the changes that we just talked about, which really, while they're important, there aren't really a whole lot of them. It won't be that hard to get this back out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. If that is that, I will let you guys go on with your regular planning commission meeting. And get the changes made.
Great. Thank you for puzzling this all out with us.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Lee.
All righty. So we'll be in touch soon, and we can talk about this at your November meeting.
Okay.
Great.
All righty.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
So the only thing that I have to comment on that basically is that we didn't get a chance to go through the 7A memo, which are the draft general amendments. Do you want to hold off on that? Does anybody have any comments about that?
Sorry, I'm not following which.
Well, we got the Boulder zoning process memo 8A, which is kind of what we just went through. And then we also got a Boulder zoning process memo 7A, which had the drafts for the general plan amendments.
Okay.
So does anybody want to go through that right now and take a look at it, or would you rather wait till next month?
So I didn't have any questions or concerns with the changes, but I think if y'all didn't have a chance to review it, that we should allow that and put it on the agenda for next month.
Yeah.
I would appreciate the time to really take a look at it.
Okay.
It's a much shorter document. I've been through it too, and I am good with it. So.
Okay. So then what we'll do is wrap that information up until our next meeting. Lee will have the new table of uses. People can take a look at the rest of that document, and then we'll also talk about the 7A. Everybody will get a chance to look at that one too. So we'll put both of those on the agenda for next month. Does anybody else have any comments about what we've been talking about with Lee Nellis? So does anybody need copies of any of this, or does anybody have, I want to make sure that everybody has good access to all this information. So everybody feel good about the access that they have?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. You were one of them, Haley. I wanted to make sure that you were able to process this in a way that's good for you, whether it's paper or whether it's on the computer.
So. Yep, I got it on the computer, and that's good for me. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then, so I guess we'll go ahead and close with Lee Nellis. And we're going to go ahead and open to initial public comments. And we generally leave about 5 minutes a person. I'm not sure who's going to get on and make any comments, but we will now open up our initial public comments. Oh, and Peg, are you going to recognize, can you recognize these people? If anybody wants to make comments?
Yeah, I'm looking for hands up on the participant list. If you're on video, you can just wave your hand and We can see you.
Oh. I just unmuted. I don't have a way to, okay. I'm not going to do the vid. Yeah.
Okay, Donna. So whenever. Donna.
Do we have a...
Go ahead.
Yes or no? Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't going to say anything tonight, but having just listened to what I listened to, can you hear me?
Could you please tell us what your name?
Oh, I thought she did. It's Donna Owen.
Oh, Donna. Okay. I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure I knew. Thank you.
Actually, it's good to say that for the recording anyway. So thanks, Colleen. Yeah. Go ahead, Donna. Sorry.
Okay. This is regarding what I just listened to, and I don't know if this is the best time to say anything. I understand how scary commercial businesses off Highway 12 can be, but I also, when it comes to an RV park, I've always kind of dreaded the thought of a big one right on Highway 12. I've always hoped it could be tucked away in some trees somewhere and that we need one. Not that I have a perfect place for that, but it was just kind of my idea. And then a place like Boulder Mesa came to mind with this now. Boulder Mesa couldn't, the restaurant, if they wanted to reopen it or if someone wanted a place like that, it wouldn't be allowed. Is that right? Because it wouldn't have direct access to Highway 12. It's on the Burr Trail. I know it's tricky, but maybe the absolute thing means absolute, right? I'm not even really sure if I'm interpreting that right. Just food for thought. That was all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna.
Okay. Canning, I'm not seeing anybody else here. Okay. No one else that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Scott Beagler is trying to get your attention.
He is. Yeah. Why am I not seeing Scott? Scott, where are you? Okay, fine.
We can't hear you, Scott.
Scott, are you talking? We can't hear you.
Oh.
He seems to be unmuted, but we can't hear him. Scott, stop.
Oh.
I can't hear you, and maybe you have to sign out and sign back in, possibly.
Oh.
I don't know what that says either.
Oh, sorry. Oh, okay. Maybe he didn't. Okay. Okay. So I think, so we don't seem to have anyone else right now as far as initial public comments.
If Scott wants to say something, maybe if he leaves the meeting and then signs back in, maybe that will clear his problem.
It sounds like he doesn't want to say anything. Muting problem. Okay. Okay. So we still, I want to make clear again that we don't have anyone else right now for public comment.
Not that I'm seeing.
Okay.
Judy is slapping her hand.
Oh, yeah, I just wanted to ask if I could get a copy of the stuff that Lee Nella sent you, please.
Oh, yes. Okay, I'm thinking you were on that distribution, Judy. Is it a matter of being in Word format or Excel format? Is that the problem?
Oh, it might be. How about if I'll double check it after the meeting, Peg, and if I don't have it, I'll let you know.
Okay, because you are on that distribution, so you should have it. But if you can't open what you have, then let me know.
All right, I will. Thanks.
Okay, so do we get everybody?
As far as I know,
okay.
Elizabeth was asking if Scott knew how to call in if he can't unmute.
I think he seems to be okay.
Well, he's here, but he needs to unmute himself now for sure.
Okay.
There.
So, okay.
Oh, good. You can talk now. Okay.
Yeah, I went out and went back in. So.
Okay.
And if you closed it already to public, that's fine. I'll wait till the end.
No, we didn't. So okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Appreciate the opportunity to at least share a few words. Is there a potential that next month's meeting could actually be social distance and indoors at the community center? I think it'll be a little too cold, obviously, for outdoors. Is there an opportunity for that?
I think I might answer that. It's actually up to me whether we hold our meetings electronically or whether we want to have a social distance meeting. I have wanted to get together in an open meeting for several months, but what I'm trying to do is follow what Steve does with the town council. And I would like to consider having a meeting next month to start maybe trying to figure out how we can put the building together so that people would feel comfortable. I know our numbers are up higher up north than they are down here. And so I personally can say, yes, I would consider it. And yes, I would like to see if we could maybe do that. What I'd like to do is, since you asked, and I hope you don't mind since we're doing this in the public comments, but how many of our commissioners would consider a meeting in the building next month? What kind of information do we have on that?
I am not super excited about that idea. This is Haley. I think it would depend on, like how many people and how the spacing worked out. Because if there's a lot of people attending and it's a small room, and I don't know, maybe even in the, you walk through the hallway, maybe, I don't know. I mean, I just would want more details before I said yes to that as far as
that's
what
fine,
that
Haley,
like
that's,
exactly.
That's kind of what I'm looking for. So does anyone else have a comment?
Yeah, this is Cookie calling. And I fall into that ancient age category. And I'm not too excited about getting together with everyone. I think if it were maybe in that bigger kitchen area, not in the kitchen, but, in the area out in front, that's a little more space. But And definitely I would go along if everyone else felt it was really necessary, but I'm not too excited about it.
This is Scott again, Scott Bigler. Did you see Corla's note?
Yeah.
Saying if the subdivision's on, it could be large crowds. And I think that's a really good point. I don't know if we would be able to pull it off or not, but I think that this becomes a hard discussion forum when you're on Zoom. And some people are a little reluctant to add their voice, if you will, because they may not be technology literate or whatever, or even if somebody says something that's in opposition to what they think, they kind of want to hold back and they don't dare join in. So there is a reason to try and open it if the subject next month is the subdivision. So
I'm just going to say basically that the subdivision, from what I understand, has been put on, and I assume that you're talking about Hoyt, and that has been put on hold until December.
Oh, okay. Well, then that makes sense. So let me just share a 2-minute observation. When we were younger, we first lived in Colorado, and we traveled extensively throughout the small towns there. We like the western slope and some of those old mining towns, some of the small agricultural towns. Well, with the purpose last week, we revisited that entire area from basically the San Luis Valley to Grand Junction, both north and south. I looked at those little towns that had been pretty similar to what Boulder and Escalante looked like, let's say that 40 years ago when we were there, 40 and 50 years ago. And I could see the problems of unplanned community because it looked, some of those towns looked like they had blight, to be very honest with you. And I know that it was a purpose that they wanted affordable housing and people came to work there either in the ski industry or in the mining or just because they loved the mountains of Colorado. So as we take into consideration this potential subdivision, I think there's a real reason to look beyond what we're offering just to ourselves. What does our town look like 10, 20, 30 years from now? Because there was a lot of sad towns there. And I saw a couple who had done it right, who had great zoning, who had great planning that didn't look like there were blighted areas. And so I just want to add that consideration as you continue to mull over this subdivision in the coming months. And obviously there's no hurry for it. You can, because now it's been put off again, but I would just petition that members of the Planning Commission consider that pretty seriously of what happens when small towns try to make room for, what would you say, a room that they don't have a good enough economic base, if you will, to be able to have full-time housing. And that's similar to us, very similar. That's all I've got to say. Appreciate you giving me the time.
Okay, so thank you, Scott.
You bet.
Do we have anyone else?
Yes, I have a comment.
Okay, Judy.
In our town council meeting, Steve did make it when he was talking about getting back to our regular meetings, he did mention the fact that we will still continue with Zoom meetings. If they decide to have open meetings, they still have Zoom part-time for those that don't want to come to the open meetings. So that just might be something you want to think about, you know, as you're talking about it and stuff. So it could go both ways, you know. And I think it's going to be that way for a little bit, I would imagine. That's all.
So are you saying, so Peg, could we set up Zoom and have an open meeting also?
Well, that is one thing I wanted to say. We've had a meeting with the South Central guy, Dave Torgerson, since then. And the town has a serious bandwidth problem. And until we get the fiber connected that is being worked on, presumably as we speak, we do not have the capability of doing a decent video. We tried to do a Cliff Notes Writers Conference over last weekend with basing out of the town and doing Zoom, and that crashed immediately. So I would say that, yes, right now, Steve is interested in doing a hybrid situation in the best of all worlds. If we can set up most likely the larger meeting area, what Cookie was talking about, what I'll call the community room, if we could set that up so that there is adequate spacing that's possible where at least the, he was thinking more in terms of the commissioners or the town council being in present at the meeting and Zooming everybody else. That's kind of what he was thinking of. Because you get into...
I didn't get that.
Well, this is conversation we've had when we were talking with Dave and how to do stuff. So the other problem you have to consider too is how not everyone who might want to be in the public meeting is going to fit. So who decides? Is it first come, first serve, and you close the door? I mean, there's several details that would need to be worked out, but I think ideally there would be a hybrid situation for quite some time where we try to do indoor meetings when we safely can, and accompany with Zoom. But like Elizabeth is another town council person who I know does not want to meet indoors for the foreseeable future. I probably shouldn't talk on her behalf, but yeah, I think there are some problems that need to be worked out. I wouldn't look to that in the November meeting, certainly, and we'll just have to see about beyond that.
Okay, good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yep.
Since Michela isn't here, we won't be talking about the town property mapping for RSTRs, I assume.
Right.
And so we'll go ahead and move on to staff reports. And Curtis, did you say that you were going to talk a little bit about the cell towers?
Yeah, I just wanted to, can you hear me?
Yes.
I just wanted to give you a heads up or update you. I think I forwarded an email to you that I sent to the AT&T representative, but what's going on right now is we have an application that came in like 2 weeks after we passed the cell tower ordinance. So we were ahead of the application. And so my response to the person processing it, and this is the one in the middle of town, and their application is to replace that tower with a 55, it's about 35 feet, and they want to replace it with a 55-foot monopole. And this is FirstNet, which is owned by AT&T. And basically their equipment is first responders. So I let them know that, look, we have a new ordinance. You need to examine it and look at it. It requires co-location if possible, and pursuing the best options and mitigation, et cetera. And it names the center of town is not the ideal location. Then we got a call from an outfit called DW Tower, or Steve did, and asked me to join him. So Steve and I went up and met DW Tower on top of Thompson Ledge on Rod Peterson's property. And as Josie pointed out, that's an interesting road. Anyway, so the proposal that they are preparing and getting ready to submit is to replace the 50-foot tower up there with a stronger 50-foot tower that would co-locate all of the communication needs in town. And so the discussion with Steve, or Steve's feedback very preliminarily, was that would the reception be better up there? Would this be a more ideal situation? Would this handle the cell people? And the DW Tower is saying, yeah, they're talking to all of these people and getting everything on one tower and making it large enough to handle all future needs, or for the foreseeable future. So those are the one is an active application that I've told them I can't sign it as complete until you look at all these co-location features. And then the other one is in process. He called me Monday or Tuesday, I think it was, and they've got all their agreements in line, whatever. So you're going to be confronted with, you know, our new ordinance, two applications, how to mix these together, what's the best solution, you know, what do you want to look at under our ordinance. So anyway, that's what you're going to be faced with. Maybe moving the one, maybe getting rid of the one in the middle of town and moving it up there. But I can't speak for AT&T, obviously, whether they'd be willing to do that. But under our ordinance, I think we have a very strong case for doing that as a more optimal situation. But as you've just gotten through discussing, I don't know if this is a public utility use or a commercial use or what it is. I mean, But you're talking about doing something now, although it's not passed through you or the town council yet. But I guess giving a heads up that it's coming, and I don't know exactly when, but when they come in, I process them, and when they're complete, I bring them to you. So that's about all I can say about it.
Okay. Well, that's good information, and it looks like we got started on this right in the nick of time. We'll just wait and wait for that application to come across, so everybody can be thinking about it.
I have a small report.
Okay.
Actually, I gave the most of my report, just updating you on the situation with the bandwidth in town. That was part of it. And the other thing, I just want to let Corla especially know that there is now a place on the town website for letters and comments that come in that are sort of extraneous. I know that all the four or five letters that are related to the Burr Trail Meadow subdivision thing, I know they're related to that, but I separated them off because they didn't inform the discussion that happened the October 13th evening. So I wanted to park those letters someplace, but not confuse them with things that were actually considered with the discussion. So they are there now. People can read them. And if and when the project is presented, I will I'll move those letters, or at least link to those letters, to the meeting itself when that happens. Okay.
Okay.
So that's kind of any, that would apply to pretty much any letter that would come in that is not anonymous and pertaining to something the town is considering.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So I don't think we have any more staff reports. So let's talk about what we decided for November 12th. Right now, it looks like we just have Lee Nellis, and we'll discuss. I think I see us basically discussing that and then setting the December for a public hearing, maybe. I think after everybody gets a chance to read through what Lee gave us, we'll get the table of uses, the current one, and then we can talk about it. Is anyone prepared to have a meeting, a public meeting in November for what we discussed tonight?
You know, my suggestion is that we all take the time to really go through it because it's such a long document, and then we set some time aside in the November meeting so we can discuss it as a planning commission. And then the second part of that would be to come up with a clear and simple way to explain it, because it's very complicated, to the public for a public hearing in December or whenever we decide.
Well, I realize that we've gone through, there's a lot of information here, but if it's put into the documents, like if Lee will insert the information, that the two-page information or four-page information that we got tonight, as far as it going into the general plan, I think it will be easy to read. That is much shorter than the other plan or memo 8 that we got, and I agree with you. I think that once we get the document next month and we can all look at how that's all been inserted, I think we'll be able to understand it better, and then we can have that public meeting for December. I agree with you.
Yeah, and my point is we need to come up with a concise summary of it to explain it to the public, at least the context or the framework. Otherwise, I'm not sure it'll be easily read by the public who hasn't been dealing with it for the last 2 years.
Well, and how about, so the thing that I'm wondering too is, can that information, Peg, can you put that information on the website?
Yes.
So that's...
I can put, you mean, just, are you talking about just Lee's documents and put them on the website?
No, what I'm looking at is how the documents as they will look being changed.
Well, no.
I just put Lee's documents up there. Then the public can see how it's transparent, how what's being struck out, what's being added, and so on. And then they have a month to look at it before the public hearing, which I think
even
is very
important.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I totally understand what you're saying, Matt, and I agree with that. We have to have those documents available so that people can see what we're talking about. I think that's the hardest part right now with these meetings, too, is getting the documents out to the public, where generally in a meeting we're just maybe handing out copies. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think next month we should, when we have close to the final draft, we should put that out on the website to give people some time beforehand to review.
Well, I can stick these documents up there with meeting materials for this meeting, and that's for your reference as well.
That would be great.
Just as is. And then what I'm thinking about, you're talking about summarizing, Matt. I think the whole concept of what the checklists do is probably the most alien to, you know, I mean, what exactly that concept is. So,
well, how about I'll try and take that on and come up with some way to frame it in a clear way.
Yeah. Okay. That'd be good. Okay.
Okay. And then we'll have Ms. Shayla do the RSTR, the mapping. And then maybe potentially we'll have the cell tower. We'll wait until Curtis comes back with that. Okay. And I think that's all for right now. I think that might be enough. We covered a lot today.
Yeah. And,
okay. And then we'll.
Oh, I'm sorry. Just remember that next meeting is November 10th. And we automatically start our 6 p.m. standard time meetings. So
right. So do we want to go ahead and meet at 5, or do we want to stay with 6 and just
So 5 is a conflict for those of us who are working 9-to-5 jobs.
So I'd like to leave it at 6 and just keep doing the meetings like how we're doing them right now. Is that good with everybody?
Yes.
I think that's good. I'd like to do that too, Josie.
Okay.
5 is early, even for those of us who don't have conflict.
Yeah, you're watching me eating my dinner while I talk. So.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and plan that for 6.
Okay.
And then We'll approve the September minutes then, too.
Correct.
Cookie, did you say something?
I would just like to, I've been sitting here thinking about Matt taking on this kind of clarification of our worksheet or whatever you want to call it. And as I've been talking to members of the community, I think it would be really neat, Matt, if you could somehow actually explain maybe even graphically, like that we have a general plan and then we have the table of uses and what those have to do with the general plan. And then the ordinances, which are the legal part, I think that there are some people that have great confusion about what the heck everything is and how it all fits into what we're considering. Have you found that to be a problem talking about things?
I mean, I agree. If I'm confused about it, I certainly know the public is.
Yeah. Well, maybe we all need that then. I don't know. It just seems like that there should be a way that we can simplify the whole thing so that that people know, like, what, like, we're not changing the heart of what the town wants. We're just amplifying it and making it more of a legal thing to keep everyone legally on the same ground.
I hear you, Cookie. I don't think we can do it in a one-shot thing. I think this is a transparency thing that goes on with every meeting, where as we are changing things, we're also educating people in as simple and straightforward a manner as we can, without any bias. This is what we're up to, and so on. But I don't, you know, unless we hire some sort of a writer to put all this stuff together, you know, I don't know how to do that effectively in one shot. So,
yeah, I look at all the time that we have spent with Lee, the hours that we've spent, and these, how we, I don't know how you're going to explain these worksheets to people in a way. Yeah, I don't know. Good luck. You know?
Well, it just seems like to me, the worksheet doesn't seem that complex to me. It's like a checklist. It's like, oh, we're here, we're having a commercial thing brought before us. We have to make sure that they fit into this checklist that we're going down. We don't want to miss anything. So blah, blah, blah. But I was just thinking about the whole picture, it seems to me, has gotten skewed, where people think that we should be maybe making decisions off of the general plan.
Yeah.
Somehow, you know, skipping the ordinances, skipping everything else. I don't know. I've just been amazed.
I think that might be a bigger discussion. Here, I just wanted to focus on describing that we're changing decision-making process in general, and sort of describe what it was and what it now is going to become with development, or what
it's
it
a good
might
start.
Become with standards.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good start, Matt.
I totally appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So those are the things.
Sorry, one more thing, and maybe... Yeah. Corla, at some point, since you have some experience with this, I can talk with you about it, how
and
they do
can,
it in bigger places.
And we can open that up. We can go ahead and, since we have discussing the upcoming business, we're kind of finished with that. And so we'll go ahead and open up to the public comments. And if Corla wants to have anything to say, let's go ahead and open that up.
Sure. Thank you very much. I what I just want to say is that I didn't realize you guys had been at this for 2 years, but you know, it's pretty amazing to me to watch you guys work and go through all that stuff, and it's a lot, you know, and just remember, you can't please everybody, and it's a thankless job. And no good deed goes unpunished. So those are my caveats about planning and that kind of stuff. But I just really want to say how much I appreciate what you guys are trying to do. It's hard to come in and change things when people are ingrained for a long time. But just keep at it. Keep going at it. And, you know, people can read stuff. Those charts aren't hard to read. There's just a lot of it. And you're not at that point yet. But you send it out, you email it, you post it, you do that kind of stuff in hopes that they read it. There's always people that don't read anything, and then people that read everything. So just, you know, keep, you know, pushing and doing what you're doing. But thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Peggy, do we have any more comments?
Elizabeth, Julian.
Okay. Elizabeth?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
My name's Elizabeth Julian, and since Peg brought up my comfort of in-person meetings, I, as a town council member, at this point am not comfortable deciding on meetings in person until there's a proposed option. At this time, only potential ideas have been discussed without any true hybrid or in-person options that have been detailed.
Okay. I get that. And I think we all agree with that, basically, that we're going to have to come up with some ideas or some options. And I'm all for it.
Yeah. And that was just where I left it off with the town council, just for people to know what I said in our discussions.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Okay. I don't see any other hands up. Does anyone want to wave if you're unable to wave on your screen? Cookie, are you waving?
No. I was, but it was for a drink of water.
Oh. No, I don't.
Okay. So how does everybody feel about, does anybody want to make a motion, or should I? I'll make a motion that we go ahead and close the meeting, the public or Boulder Town Planning Commission meeting.
I'll second that motion. All in favor?
All in favor.
Aye, Matt.
Julie Apperson, aye.
Cookie Schaus, aye.
Josie Muse, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Okay.
And you got Matt, right?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you all so much. Enjoy your reading.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.